This is Wyman and Bob
on Seattle Sports.
Streaming live on the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
We are live at T-Mobile Park. It's Wyman and Bob, Seattle Sports on 710. Beautiful day outside as we watch the Seagulls out here cleaning up the mess in the stands as they do after every game, like they're trained to do it, Dave. They do the work for everybody out there, picking up all the extra food.
They're kind of like Lefkos out there, right? Like, that's what Mike does in the main press room here. He sort of scours everywhere for cookies and ice cream and soda.
He came in very proud. He goes, "I got the last one." The cookie. He was very proud of himself.
He's a scavenger, yeah, if you will.
He's out there. He's just looking for what's been left behind.
The good thing is he doesn't poop all over. We appreciate that, Mike.
Not as far as we know.
All I see is just white bombs falling out of the sky out here with these seagulls. I know it's going to come over here and hit my computer.
There's a reason I went into the second row, Dave. Yeah. I don't want to be in that target area.
Yeah, though. I see that.
By the way, how about Dion and his son going after former players on Twitter, and then his son saying, "Bro had to be mid." Basically saying he's a nobody on the team and
mid
saying, okay. Pretty mid.
Yeah,
that's what the kids are saying.
Oh, I've never heard of that one.
You've never heard mid?
No.
Yeah.
I thought maybe you're
not very hip.
I thought he meant mad and just misspelled it.
No, said no? He's mid. Okay. He said he didn't even know who he was, and then Dion coming out saying my son's going to be a top five pick, and who are you, and blah blah blah.
Well, he also was talking about manipulating the draft next year. My guys are going to go to certain places. And
yeah.
It happened to be all the teams, include all the teams that he played for. He's making a stink, right? I mean, he's drumming up attention for Colorado
Certainly
football.
Doing that.
And I don't know if he's doing it on purpose or that's just his nature, but it makes games more interesting, whether you like him or you don't like him and you want to see him get beat. I feel like a lot of people are tuning in to Colorado football because of him.
Yeah, it's kind of like being the heel in whether it's wrestling, yeah, boxing, MMA. You know, it's popular to be the guy that everybody tunes in to see for one reason. They want to see you get beat or they want to see you win. Yeah. There's no gray area. And he's becoming that. Like you said, I don't know if it's intentional. I'm not sure what his son's doing. He should just focus on what he's doing on the field. I would not look at him as a top five pick right now, but he's got a season to play, and maybe that becomes true. But, yeah kind of interesting, the father-son going after people on Twitter. Meanwhile, we've been doing these Seahawk profiles, taking a look back at the draft picks. We talked about Byron Murphy, and now we get a little closer look at Christian Haynes, a guy who I said is maybe a sign of getting old, Dave, as I was maybe most excited about a guard that they drafted. I mean, I love how Murphy looks, certainly.
Yeah, your life is definitely slowing down, Bob.
I was certainly excited about this guard who looked physical and mean and nasty. And we love these calls that the GMs make to players they're drafting. And here's the call to Christian Haynes.
Christian. Hey, Todd. It's Josh, man. How you doing?
I'm doing good.
All right, things are going well for you there?
Yes, sir.
All right. Hey, you want to come to the West Pacific Northwest?
Yes, sir.
All right. Well, we're about to take you right here. I'm going to hand you to our head coach, Mike McDonald, okay?
Yes, sir.
All right, baby. You're a Seahawk.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
All right.
You hear that, Christian?
Yes, sir.
Congratulations, brother. Congratulations, man. You're a Hawk, bro.
Thank you. Thank you.
Awesome. Who are you with right now?
It's my own family and friends.
Oh, that's great, man. I can't wait to see you. I can't wait to see you, man. We'll get you up here soon.
Pretty cool. You're pretty subdued kid. Just pretty reserved. What was your call, Dave? Did you yell and scream? Was the coach on the other end, Chuck Knox, saying, "Dave Wyman, we're excited to have you here"?
I don't even remember, man. I think they had one of the scouts do it or something. Maybe
you were second rounder. You weren't the deep into the draft. How many? And even then, they had more rounds then, didn't they?
Yeah. They
was it 12?
I think it went a lot faster too back then. But
was it 12 rounds when you got drafted?
It was either 12 or 14. I think it was 12.
So being second is even bigger.
Well, thanks, Bob. So I feel so good about myself.
Well, I think that warrants a call from the head coach and the GM, does it not?
Yeah, I really don't remember. They might have. I'm pretty sure I talked to Rusty Tillman, and Rusty, linebacker coach and special team guy, was the guy that kind of pounded the table for me. You know, he was the guy that got up, and because he had worked me out at a private workout at Stanford and everything. So, but yeah, it's the other thing I heard from him was that he said something about how I'm going to dominate. And I was like, I like this kid's confidence. He's like, you know, like somebody asked him, what are you going to get? What are we going to get from your game? And he's like, I'm going to go out and dominate. But you look at, you know, one of the things you can do to help yourself as far as the draft goes is have a good Senior Bowl, and not just the game, but the practices, because they have a professional staff there. I don't know who it was. I think it's typically, you know, the loser of the AFC, NFC championship game or something like that. But, you know, that's one of those things that everybody goes down to Mobile to watch the Senior Bowl, and they stick around for the week of practice. And then they leave for the game, typically, the scouts do, because it's about what they do in practice. And, yeah, I was watching him, and he had a pass rush that I can't remember. The guy was from LSU, but, you know, he hung in there with him and just did a really good job. It's a highlight after highlight of him, have good drills as far as the blocking goes. And then, you know, you look at his he's at UConn, and I think that's one of the things that a lot of people will look at. Same thing with Tyrese Knight, who we'll talk about in a minute, who is from Conference USA. You look at some of their opponents, and you're like, UConn, I mean, they beat UMass. They beat Rice. They beat Sacred Heart.
That's a who's who.
Yeah. But they and then they lost to Duke, who was ranked 18th, 41-7. Lost to Tennessee 59-3.
Yikes.
And they lost to NC State. So yeah, I mean, you look at the level of competition for both of these guys, but you know, I would say, and I'll get into a comparison later for Tyrese Knight, but you look at guys like Bobby Wagner didn't come from like the biggest program, Utah State.
Right.
You know, I think it's gotten a little bit more prestigious, but I think it's a Mountain West, at least at the time, type of environment. But, you know, he was also, I think Jim Mora is the head coach at UConn. And I think he also, you know, the fact that he's running it, he was a head coach here, obviously. And, you know, the same thing when you look at like Deion Sanders or somebody that, you know, runs a really good program. It's like, yeah, you trust him for that reason. But I just like that he's dominant. I looked at his film. He's, you know, got good feet. The same thing, though, you look at these college guys, his hands are constantly outside. Like, he's coming up to block guys and just kind of grabbing them. And I'm like, you're going to get a holding call in the NFL. You got to get your hands inside. But I don't worry too much about that. If it was his feet or his pad level, I would worry about it a little bit more. But it's his hands, and I think you can fix that pretty easily.
If you're a college coach, and I know you've said this repeatedly, and Big Ray said it yesterday when we had him on, that at the college level, you can get away without being precise. You can get away with, yeah, it's supposed to be, you know, five steps and cut. You can just take six or five and a half and cut, whatever. You're held to a different standard, I guess. But with something like that, it feels like a lot of things you point out are very fundamental things. Like, man, this is just the basics of this position. Hands inside versus hands outside. He's getting away with it. But why wouldn't a college coach correct that? Even though he's getting away with it, do you feel like the coaches are looking at him going, well, let's not bother because it's not broken?
Yeah, I mean, I think he probably wasn't getting holding penalties. I didn't see the stat on that. But if he's not and he's just getting the job done, I feel like, you know, because they always talk about, you know, when you're coaching college football, you get those guys for a couple hours a day.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, when they're in the NFL, there's plenty of time to work on that stuff. And so I think in college, it's like, we only have this guy for so long. Everything's working. You know, I played really high in college, and I mean high as far as like my hips, not
the other
way. No, you
were smoking the weed.
I knew somebody would text that in.
Well, did your coaches ever say anything to you?
Some people say I do radio high, but
were the coaches ever yell, Wyman, get down?
Yeah, I mean, not until I got in the NFL when, you know, I think it was just like you had to do it every single play. Like maybe my college coaches said, hey, get lower and all that, but, you know, I would go and make an interception and practice, and, you know, I'd be like, okay, well, he's fine. You know, I mean, so I think those kinds of things will get you a win in college, and in the NFL they won't. So that's, you know, but I like what I see from him. He looks like a, He looks like a guy who wants to go out and punish people. He looks more like a defensive mentality than an offensive mentality, and that's what I like about him. I mean, this is a team, we talk about taking care of the trenches, and they just need to be more aggressive. We need to hit people in the mouth, man, especially on defense, but, you know, on offense as well. I mean, I just like that attack mode, and you didn't really see it. I mean, in the Washington game, I saw it when they were running the ball, and Charbonnet is just awesome to have in that running scheme. And I think, you know, Walker can do that as well. He's more of a zone read type of player, but I just love that nastiness from an offensive player. And I think that's what you get from him. And I just loved what I heard from him as far as I'm going to dominate. So yeah, that's what you do. I mean, maybe the vets are listening to him going, yeah, this kid thinks he's going to dominate, but
we got something for you.
Yeah, that'll change. But yeah, I just like his attitude coming in.
I'd much rather have a guy like that than somebody who's like, well, hopefully I can keep up. You know, I want somebody who's coming in confident and has got some nasty to him. And John, just sticking with Christian for a moment here, John Schneider talks about what it is he liked about him.
Initial quickness, length, he can get under people, he can roll his hips. Like the pass protection stuff is legit. I mean, lateral movement, stays in front of people, he's got strong hands. He's got anchor, he's just a really good football player, really good, so experienced, he knows like the nuances, and he had a great Zoom interview with Coach Huff. They love the football intelligence, so everybody was just really excited.
Yeah, offensive line coach. Mm-hmm. I think they want to sit there and talk football, and you know, typically they'll ask you like, "What did you run there? What did you guys do there? What kind of scheme?" I remember when I went to Philadelphia for a workout at the end of my career, John Gruden came up to me, and he was the special team coach, and he comes up to me and he's like, "What do you guys run in Denver? What's that defense you got going there?" And I was kind of talking to him. I don't think he was impressed because I didn't get a job with the Eagles. But yeah, he was like a little special team coach back in 1996 is when I took that trip. But that's what coaches want. They want to talk to the players and know that that they know what they're doing and can talk football. And those guys sit around and talk football all day long. When they hear it from their players, they love that because that means that they get it. So, yeah, I think, a lot of what I think we're looking at a guy that probably has the same attitude as Anthony Bradford.
The nasty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think now all of a sudden, you know, now this kid is a rookie. I would say that for every single one of them, there's always a chance that the rookie flames out, you know.
Certainly.
But this happens every year, and I trust John's instincts as far as, which guys make it and which guys don't. But, I think this one's a good one. I think I'll say it's a little odd because it's a UConn player, and that's not like a big program or anything. Same thing with our next pick we'll look at, but where you find players.
Well, I would just say before we move on to Tyrese Knight that, you know, and just going through, and we did the whole post-draft grades and looked at it, you know, what everybody was saying and who they liked, who they didn't. I didn't really see anybody. You talk about him going to UConn, and I get that, but I didn't see any of the, you know, the analysts, the experts, any of those people holding that against him or looking at that as a negative. Everybody seemed to love that pick. The first two picks, the Seahawks got a lot of praise for both of these, for Murphy and for Haynes here. So I'm, you know, school be damned. I think that people just see a talent in him and said that was a solid pick. Now we move to the guy that I would say, if there is somebody in their draft class you'd say was controversial or viewed as a reach, this name was mentioned most often, and that's Tyrese Knight, linebacker. And before we get your assessment, Dave, let's get the draft call to Tyrese.
Hello.
Call his agent, please.
I got him right now.
Is it Tyrese? Hey, this is the first. How are you doing, Tyrese? It's John Schneider with the Seahawks. How's it going, bud? You ready to fly back up to Seattle, man? Yo. Hello. Tyrese, are you there? Yeah. Hey, it's John Schneider with the Seahawks, buddy. Can you hear me? Okay, we're going to select you right here at 118, okay? Yeah, you gotta be picking up your phone, homie.
Pick up your phone, homie.
Well, and then he tweeted out. I got the tweet here. The Seahawks tweeted out that video of what you just heard. And then he retweeted it and said, man, I was in the middle of nowhere, no bars.
Yeah, and I instantly thought, oh, there's nowhere to celebrate? Yeah. Oh, man.
That's where Dave's mind
went. That's a bummer.
What? No bars?
No bars. Oh, that's right. That's the phone reception. But
I was in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah. Well, I wonder why. I mean, maybe he didn't think he was going to get drafted
Maybe he was looking at the – he was the one guy, and you've seen it, Dave, that – and it doesn't mean he won't be great, but he's the one – well, not – it's actually both their fourth-round picks that people pointed to and said, yeah, they could have gotten both those guys later, and those felt like reaches to a lot of people. But he's – what do you see from him? We'll play what Mike McDonald thinks of him in a moment, but what do you see when you watch him?
Well, he's 6 foot, 235. He reads. I like his eyes. That's what the scouts will always say. I like his eyes. Well, what does that mean? Like, they're in the backfield. He's reading guards. He's reading the offense. I see a lot of really good stuff that way from him. This is a guy that spent a couple years at a community college, and then, you know, he comes up to UTEP, and first of all, at the combine, ran a 4.63. His bench press was 21 reps, but he played 45 games at UTEP, 390 tackles, 30 tackles for loss, 8.5 sacks. You watch him on film, he's really good at reading. Like, he seems like a very smart player. He reads the offense. You know, you get pulling guards, and, you know, a lot of times you'll see that they'll try to fool you with all kinds of different motion, and he just seemed to always know where the ball is. So I really like that about him. He needs a little bit of help as far as shedding blocks. You know, it's one thing to take on a blocker, but then to get rid of him. And I saw some good things there, but
he's not catching him, is he?
Yeah, no. No, okay. He's coming up and hitting him, actually, and taking him on. There's actually a noise that's made when he hits the guard.
When there's a collision.
Ah, man, yeah. So, I mean, that's something I really miss. But, you know, what's interesting about it, I was looking at him also and going, okay, you look at UTEP and who they played. Who were their opponents? Well, they beat Incarnate Word. They beat FIU, Florida International, Sam Houston.
Yeah.
They beat them. So, and then, you know, when they played like Northwestern, Arizona, Liberty, who was ranked, I mean, they lost those games. So it's a small time type of program. But you know what? So was Utah State. Mm-hmm. You know, Utah State at the time, when they drafted Bobby Wagner in the second, it wasn't like a huge deal. And then also, you know, looking at, I went back and looked at Bobby's college stuff, and I looked at Tyrese Knight. Pretty similar. And if you look at the games, Tyrese Knight played in 45 games, Bobby Wagner 48. He had 390 tackles, Knight did, Bobby 445. But if you look at tackles for loss, he had 32, Bobby had 28.5. He had 8.5 sacks, Bobby had 4.5. He had a couple interceptions, Bobby had 4 interceptions, but he knocked down 16 passes, Bobby knocked down 2. And then Tyrese Knight had 4 forced fumbles, Bobby didn't have any. So at least that are recorded. And I was just looking at Bobby in college. Now, we all know that he's a Hall of Fame type of linebacker, but, you know, when you look at him coming out of college, and that's the part I think that John really gets. It's like he can imagine. I have a hard time sometimes when I'm looking at a guy playing in college going, well, if he's screwing it up here, why wouldn't he screw it up at the next level? Mm-hmm. But I think John is honed in on what matters and what doesn't. And when you look at this guy, he's really capable. I look at him and go, man, he's a great player, but you just don't know if he's going to make that jump to the next level. But I don't know. It kind of made me feel a little bit better looking at Bobby's numbers and just how he played. And I would say that if you look at some of the highlights at UTEP, as opposed to what Bobby was doing at Utah State, sometimes he's better. And I'm not saying he's going to be Bobby Wagner, but it is, it's interesting to look at. Everybody has to take that next jump, and you don't know if they're going to do it or not. And he did in a very big way. Bobby did.
Well, let's hear Coach Mike McDonald talking about what it is he likes about Tyrese Knight.
The first thing that pops out on the tape is he sees the game quickly. Instincts, I guess, is a good way to put it, but like moving where the ball is going kind of before everybody else. He stays square. I think he brings some thump at the point of attack. And then when we brought him in, we got to meet him. He just really liked the person and the competitor. And his demeanor is soft-spoken right now, but I think he's a very, very clear communicator. And then, you know, just a guy throughout the process we started to really like. And, you know, linebackers are paid to make tackles, and he makes a lot of tackles. So that's a good thing.
There we go. Yeah, and, you know, the other thing I saw him, yeah, they had a couple of nasty tackles. One on the sideline where he did the dune buggy thing that we saw Witherspoon
dune
do.
Dune buggy.
I asked Pete about that. I think I told you that down on the field last year. I was like, what does dune buggy mean anyway? I've never heard that one. He's like, I don't know. I don't know what I was saying.
But I like that you've now made it an official term.
Yeah.
Pete just said something and didn't realize. I don't even know what I was talking about.
Well, first
about.
I called it a souffle.
Yeah.
And then it's actually a suplex.
Yeah.
I mean, he's nasty. He's aggressive. And that was another thing. And look, as much as you might say, I don't care if he's a good dude or not. They loved him when he came in to, he's one of the 30 that they visited with, or whether it was at the combine, they loved him. They just thought he has great football intelligence and exactly what Mike McDonald was talking about there. I like coaches versus scout speak much better. Coaches say, you know, yeah, like the scouts will say, he's got great eyes. Well, Mike McDonald comes on and he's like, he's got good eyes, like he reads things, you know, like he's on top of things. He anticipates things. He sees the game. Like, there were so many times where there are all these, you know, this distraction. There's a guard pulling that way and a guy going in motion. And this guy, Tyrese Knight, seemed to just hone in on where the ball is really well. He doesn't get distracted by a bunch of the window dressing that happens as far as motion and, you know, cross action and things like that. So yeah, I think and listening to Mike McDonald, no knock on John obviously, but Mike McDonald, which I understand that, like, he's like a linebacker aficionado, like that's where he started, and so he really likes him. And I think, you know, that's also one of those where if I'm John, which I'm not sure if he did this, but I would imagine if he's got two or three players and, you know, he's like, goes to Mike McDonald and says, you know, which one do you like? Because I like all three of them. Mm. Which one do you think fits us the best? And that's where we talked about they kind of had this collaboration going during draft day.
All right. There you go. Look at a couple of the Mariners draft picks. We'll continue to do a little preview as the days roll on. Meanwhile, Taylor Saucedo, who's been very, very good in that bullpen this year, is going to join us for some Mariners insight. We may throw a Seahawks question his way as well. He's a huge, huge Seahawks Huskies fan. He's a Northwest guy. He's a Seattle guy. So we'll get into that conversation coming up next as we continue live from T-Mobile Park. It's Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports on 710.
Wyman and Bob on Seattle Sports.
Continue live from T-Mobile Park. It's Wyman and Bob, Seattle Sports on 710 and seattlesports.com. Mariners lose the finale to the Atlanta Braves 5-2, but they take the series, their fifth in a row. And the pitching has been the key to everything, the starting pitching and the bullpen. And a guy who's been having a very good year to this point is one of the rare lefties in this entire organization at the big league level. That'd be Taylor Saucedo. We had a chance to catch up with him after the game, talked to him about how things have gone for him, and even pose a Seahawks question to him being the massive Seahawks fan that he is.
Taylor, finale didn't go the way you wanted, but overall 4-2 on this homestand, this team has been rolling. Just as a pitcher, I'm watching what the rotation's done and what the bullpen's been doing. Are you in awe, even being in the middle of it?
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously what they're doing is pretty special, you know, to hold the teams that we've been playing to the runs that they've been doing. It's truly incredible to watch, but it's not surprising. You know, I think we all knew what we had when we came into the season. I mean, these guys are all, you know, frontline guys for the most part, you know, at least what we believe. And, you know, we're going to go as far as they go. And I think that goes for any team, you know. Defense is always the formula to success. You know, as we were talking about earlier, Seattle Sports, you kind of see that with the Legion of Boom. But you know, I just think that you just ride those guys for as long as you can. And you know, obviously, you know, we didn't win today, but you know, I think the whole point is to try and win as many series as you can. It's obviously really hard in this game to win three in a row or four in a row, whatever it is. But if you're winning series, you're usually going to be some success in there.
It seems like bullpens year after year, kind of like offensive linemen, like there's a couple weak links. You guys don't have that at all. I mean, obviously it's talent, but what's kind of the secret formula for your guys' success in the bullpen?
It's just, I think we just trust each other. And, you know, like, just like, especially for like, just me and Gabe, like our little thing is like, we kind of compete against each other. We have little things that we do. And, you know, it kind of keeps everything fun, you know, and interesting. And it kind of takes the weight off of like our jobs of like what we do. You know, I think we fully believe in ourselves and we're just attacking. And that's the one thing they tell us all the time, dominate the zone, let them hit it. You know, at the end of the day, if we're making our pitches, the success is going to come our way, but at the end of the day, the house will always come for its money, and we're going to run into some days where it's probably not going to go our way, but if at the end of the day, if we're doing what we're supposed to, we're going to be successful more than not.
Is there a competitive, like a friendly competitive nature to where you see what the starters are doing and the bullpen where you're like, well, I'm not going to be the one that's going to cough it up?
100%. You know, obviously you want to, the starters are out there, they're giving you their best and they're going seven innings. And obviously, you know, much like in any other sport, like kickers or anything, you don't want to be the guy that screws it up. So, yeah, I mean, it definitely, you know, raises the bar a little bit, but nothing that we're not used to. You know, like, again, we saw it last year with these guys and their bullpen was just as good as last year, you know, and obviously we're missing some guys and probably not the bullpen that they expected, but, you know, that's how deep we are. And you saw it in camp with everybody. And like, anybody's going to be able to step up. It didn't matter who it was going to be. And, you know, everybody's seeing what we're seeing. And, you know, it's really fun to watch all together.
You didn't compare bullpen pitchers to kickers, did you, just now?
I did. I mean, I think we definitely get treated that way. You know, you miss that kick and you know, you're the worst guy ever. So, you know, you come in and you give up a couple runs, you're the worst guy ever. So, you know, it is what it is. You take that. You only get one or two innings every time. So, yeah, you take it with a grain of salt.
Yeah, they're not really football players, the kickers.
I mean, you know, I wouldn't mind being a kicker in the NFL. Yeah. Pretty nice job.
Well, you guys have a great chemistry out there. I mean, we've talked almost everybody in the bullpen, and everybody's a good dude, and it sounds like you guys just love hanging out. That's got to help as well to go along with the success.
Yeah, I mean, it 100%. You know, yeah, obviously, the saying goes is like, if you enjoy what you do, it's not work, right? And yeah. So we show up, and you really enjoy being around the guys. It makes it a lot of more enjoyable to do this, and with how high stress it is, you know, so it's fun to be out there with those guys.
As somebody from here, you grew up here, you're a big Seahawks fan. I see you tweeting about the Seahawks and the Huskies and everything. Is it still kind of weird that you're on the Mariners, you're playing in front of this fan base, playing on this field?
Yeah, every day. It's like I come into work, I'm like, T-Mobile's my office. Like, you know, it used to just be a fantasy land for me. And so it's truly awesome to be able to represent Seattle. Like, I, you know, I was actually just in Toronto with talking to Jordan Romano, who's also from Toronto as well. And so he's like, we were talking about it. Like, it just means a little bit more. You know, obviously I would take my job seriously if I was with anybody else. But, you know, I think it's just being here and being in front of everybody that I know and love. And it just kind of brings a little bit more out of me than it probably would anywhere else.
When do you decide to become like a bullpen pitcher? Like, how does that, I think everybody coming out of high school thinks they're going to, you know, starter and things like that. But, you know, it's a matter of, it's a great job, right? This is your office, as you said. But at what point in your career did you decide that, okay, I'm a bullpen pitcher?
Well, normally we don't get to decide. They just tell you, hey, congrats, you're a reliever. So yeah, I kind of transitioned in 2019. I was doing both a little bit, opening and relieving. So, you know, but then once in 2021 is where I fully was a reliever.
Before we let you go, what grade would you give the Seahawks on the draft? You were tweeting about it. Seemed like you liked it. What, did you feel good about it overall?
Yeah, I loved it. I think it's a B. You know, I think it was a really solid draft, and we build the trenches like I've been hoping. You know, I think that's kind of where they've been lacking a little bit, you know, up front. And, you know, Byron Murphy, he's 308 pounds, and he's moving like he's 210. So that's pretty impressive. And, you know, the other guys in there, Christian Haynes and all those guys, you know, they're going to be big. So I'm excited to see this new era of Seahawks football. It's going to be different, but it's going to be fun.
We're doing draft profiles today. Can you come up and give us a couple
of questions? I would love to. Yeah, that would be a lot of fun.
There you go. There's Taylor Saucedo after the game today. This Mariner Spotlight is presented by Muckleshoot Casino Resort and by Pacific Lamp and Supply. Good dude, man, who, if you follow him on Twitter, he is a huge Seattle sports fan. He's not just a baseball guy. He's constantly like during Seahawks games, he's tweeting, and Husky games, and during the title game, he's tweeting. So he's in, man.
Yeah, it sounds like he knows a lot about you know, the players that we drafted. I'm sure he was dialed in, but I guess the question should have been, I didn't want to say, when did you have to settle for it? Like, when did you, I guess the question is, when did you become comfortable with it? Because, like, everybody wants to go out there and be the starter, right? And, you know, it's, but I didn't want to say, well, I mean, yeah, it's just.
When were you told you weren't good enough to be a starter?
Yeah. I tried to put it as delicately as I could.
Yeah, listeners, I had to talk Dave out of phrasing it that way. He said, Bob, I got a great question for Taylor. Tell me what you think.
I said,
maybe don't use those words.
Yeah, but what did you figure out that you were so crappy that you only belonged in the... No.
That you could only be exposed to a lineup for an inning, maybe two.
But, I mean, yeah, there's lots of really good pitchers, and if you get a job as a bullpen guy, I mean, there are guys that have had 20-year careers doing that. So,
well, yeah, those are like the backup quarterbacks of the NFL, like the Dave Craig or, you know, Rick Meyer had a long career as a backup. I mean, it's amazing how many guys you realize were in the league a lot longer than you knew,
right?
And they made a heck of a living and they had a very long career. And that's same with bullpen arms. They tend to travel a lot. They play for a lot of different teams, but you can have a nice, long, successful, lucrative career as a reliever.
At least you can get in for like a full inning, or, you know, a lot of times the backup quarterback's in there because it's a blowout or something like that. So, but yeah, I mean, it's a great group of guys back there. And but it's shocking to me, like, that he knew that much, like
off the top of his head. He's throwing out Christian Haynes and Byron Murphy and all that. Yeah, good for him, man. Yeah. I love it. All right, coming up, the Mariners offense is struggling, as we've talked about and everybody's well aware. But if one guy who's been hitting, we'll see more in this lineup. Will he see more time in this lineup the way we hope they will? It's What If Wednesday. We're going to throw out the hypothetical. That is coming up next with Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports on 710.
What?
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 It's time for What If Wednesday.
Coach would have put me in fourth quarter. We'd have been state champions, no doubt.
Wyman and Bob rewrite the scripts of major moves and moments in sports every Wednesday afternoon. Now step into an alternative reality with Wyman and Bob.
It is What If Wednesday, which is presented by Mazda of Everett, where we play the hypothetical What If. Today's question, what if Josh Rojas, Dave, was the everyday starter at third? Now, I brought this up, I think, last week, and I brought it up to Blowers, and I think Mike said something along the lines of, well, I think they've got their plan, and they're going to stick to their plan, and that's the platoon with Arias. He said something along those lines. I'm paraphrasing, but basically, that's what their intentions were. That's what they're going to stick with, at least for now. I mean, you look at what he's done. Yes, last night, he was on base four times, as you were talking about during the break. He had three walks and a base hit. From the Mariners game notes entering today, he led all AL third basemen in OPS at 938, WRC plus at 175. He's hitting .318, second in on base percentage at .408, and second in slugging at .530. And I felt this way last week, and I'm looking at him again going, okay, I get you want to go that lefty righty thing, but there are certain spots that when guys are healthy, you're not platooning JP, you're not platooning Julio, you're not platooning Cal. Obviously, he gets his days off. But, you know, when you've got those guys that you feel are entrenched in their spot, you're not platooning them. Why would it be different there? Because I'm still not up on what it is Arias is providing. He's at a moment here or there.
Yeah.
But when you got a lineup that's struggling the way that it is, that I can see both arguments. I can see, well, we got to get Arias in there to get him some at bats, get him some rhythm and confidence. I understand that. But when you got a guy who's already there and you got a lineup that's struggling the way that it is and a guy who's already hot, why not ride that hot hand until it's not?
I totally agree. I mean, I think I kind of overreacted the other day when I texted you guys. I'm like, I don't ever need to see Arias out there again. Because
he never wears a uniform again if I'm in control.
Speaking of the uniform, I remember we talked to Divish about Rojas, and he's like, yeah, he's a dirtbag. And, you know, I was like, that's a compliment, right, Brady, in baseball. But, like, you looked at him today, his uniform's all dirty.
Yeah, he's got the big eye black on.
He's just a grinder, man. And, you know, you look at him the 25 games that he's gotten in, he's gotten a hit in 18 of 25 games. And, you know, you look at the numbers, obviously, what you just said. But, yeah, I don't know. I like the confidence that he plays with. And I feel like he's no situation is too big for him. He's kind of got a little bit of a cockiness to him that I really like. And it's more confidence than it is cockiness. But I kind of like that about him. So hopefully he develops into that. And, you know, it's maybe by the end of the year, we'll see him out there as a regular starter. But I would think sooner than that.
Even. Well, especially again, when you got a lineup that's struggling, it'd be different if you're like, listen, you know, Julio's on fire right now, and JP's healthy, and he's hitting well, and Ty France and Haniger, and you brought in Garver and Polanco, and all these guys are doing what the back of their card says they're going to do. All right, then maybe you do lean more on that platoon at that spot. We don't need the production the way you otherwise would. But that's not the case. That's not how it's going. We've talked about how many guys are hitting under 200, how many guys are, you know, give you a game or two where you feel like they're turning a corner, and then, okay, I guess they actually haven't. You know, especially in this situation, it feels like, what do you have to lose? Would it be worse than what you're getting elsewhere in that lineup? Would he? I don't know. I guess I don't see, other than the handedness, one's left-handed, one's right-handed, I don't see the advantage to Arias being put out there on any sort of regular basis. If Rojas is hurt or he needs a day off, certainly. But I don't know. I feel like you've got a hot hand, which is rare in this lineup right now. Go with it.
Yeah, and like I said, it's not like it's been a short sample. It's been 25 games that he's played in, and he's got the numbers that you mentioned, including the .318 average. To me, I don't know. I think maybe he's one of those guys that likes to be subbed in and doesn't mind a day off, and maybe that's like his game. But a lot of times you give guys a – you know, say, hey, you're our guy, you give the confidence to him, it helps him even more. And, you know, I mean, if his numbers get even any bigger, he's going to be an all-star. But, I mean, yeah, I like him. I just like the scrappiness. I like the fact that he's very confident. He seems like a, you know, better than average fielder. It makes, you know, he made the one throw. I think there's been maybe a couple of errors, but it just hasn't stood out to me. And I feel like it's time for him.
Yeah, you know, you look at him, he's going to be 30 years old. He's kind of been a journeyman guy in this league. And the best year he had, he played 139. He's only played over 100 games twice in his career. He's gone 41, 17, 139, 125, 59, and then 24. He played 46 with the Mariners last year. But you look at him, I mean, just in the brief time they put him in the leadoff spot, what, he had two leadoff home runs and a triple, I think, in that scenarios?
Yeah. Well, and the one was, well, I think they pinch hit him at one point and he swung at the first pitch and hit a home run.
Yeah.
And then the next day it was like the second pitch he hit a home run.
Yeah. I mean, and he's just, you know, again, I'm not trying to make the case he's a superstar and he's the key to everything. But when you have so few guys going well right now offensively, I would think you'd want the guy who is going well out there as much as possible until he's not going well, and which will happen. Anybody who's out there exposed for that long, you're going to go through your drought. You're going to go through your slump. You know, unfortunately, we're seeing it with kind of everybody at the same time. But you know, when it's so few and far between in this lineup, I'm just like, Scott, throw him in there, man. Just let him righty lefty. Who cares? Just put him in there and let him do his thing. And if it starts to turn the other way, all right, you got Arias sitting right there.
Well, the other thing, too, I'm kind of rooting for, you know, I loved Paul Sewald and everything, but I'm kind of rooting for Jerry and the trade that he made there, because Rojas, Canzone, while he was healthy, which we haven't really talked that much about him, but, yeah, I mean, he seemed to be working out, and Rojas certainly, and then who's the other kid?
Bliss.
Bliss,
yeah. Yeah, he's in the minors.
Yeah, so, yeah, I'd like to see that work out as far as that whole trade goes, because I thought Jerry took a lot of heat for that, and I want him to go out there in the middle of the field and flip everybody off like I did last time he made a big trade.
Yeah, I whether I love the trade or hate the trade, I want every one of them to work out. That's as a Mariner fan, you want to. I don't care about being wrong. I want them to work out. So hopefully this will continue that way. But I don't know. I'd love to see him have more of a regular, like, that's our third baseman until further notice.
Yeah.
So we'll see what goes on. All right, there you go again. What If Wednesday, presented by Mazda of Everett. We'll continue our profiles of the Seahawks draft class, along with breaking down the Mariners series win over the Atlanta Braves. That's all coming up next as we continue live from T-Mobile Park. It's Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports on 710.